This episode is brought to you by VPP Simplified. Now you can get element by element tracking and guidance for your VPP journey. Every aspect of the VPP requirements in one easy to use interactive spreadsheet. Achieving VPP star status can be tough, but understanding what it takes to get there can be simplified. This VPP gap tool will help you do that. Go to vppsimplified.com for more information.
Welcome to the Safety Pro Podcast, where we help you manage workplace safety one episode at a time. And now, your very own safety pro, Blaine J. Hoffman.
Welcome to another episode of the Safety Pro Podcast. Hey, just got back from another trip, was on the road and, you know, towing the camper. You come across a lot of crazy things on the road, a lot of crazy drivers, a lot of drivers doing silly stuff. I noticed it as well when, you know, I try to run, you know, at my age, anything I can do to stay active, right? And I see the cars go by at the four-way stop, or when I go to cross, you know, a residential area, I run through my neighborhood, I'll notice, and I'm not kidding, it's got to be at least 90% of the cars going by. The drivers have the phone in one hand, other hand on the steering wheel. They're either looking at the phone or they've got it to their ear. Every vehicle, it's insane. Young and older people alike, I've noticed it. So I thought, you know, I would do an episode on driver safety. So I was shocked, you know, when I started reading. We all know distracted driving is a problem. You hear it on the news. There are campaigns and billboards and everything else. But basically, I went to the internet, of course, and started looking up some stuff. Preliminary estimates from the National Safety Council indicate that motor vehicle deaths, they're down slightly, 1% in 2017 versus 2016. So the small decline is not necessarily an indication of progress as much as a leveling off of the steepest two-year increase in more than 50 years of fatalities on the road. So a 2017 assessment of it's 6% higher than the number of deaths in 2015. Now, if the estimate holds, it'll be the second consecutive year that motor vehicle deaths topped 40,000 in total. So here's another one, shocking. 4.57 million people injured seriously enough to require medical attention in motor vehicle crashes in 2017, and costs to society totaled $413.8 billion, with a B. Both figures are about 1% lower than 2016 calculations. So what can we do about any of this, really? Well, a driver safety program should help keep drivers safe as well as other motorists on the road. Now, if necessary, your program has to work to change drivers' attitudes, improve behavior, and increase the skills to build a sort of be safe culture. By instructing your employees in basic safe driving practices, then rewarding safety conscious behavior, you can help your employees and their families avoid these tragedies. Here's the problem, though. I'm going to have a link to a template, a sample driver policy template you can use in your company. And as all the templates I provide, I always encourage you to pick it apart, edit them, change the language, you know, make it yours. But the framework is there. So be sure to download that template. I have some other downloads I'll talk about here later in the episode. But, you know, here's the problem with a lot of these templates, right? The current prevention efforts. Well, let me start with the legislation, right? Nearly all legislation focuses on banning only handheld phones or texting while driving. All state laws and most employer policies allow hands-free cell phone use while driving. Public opinion polls show people recognize the risks of talking on handheld phones and texting more than they recognize the risks of hands-free phones. And many drivers mistakenly believe talking on a hands-free cell phone is safer than handheld. Now, hands-free device most often is a headset that communicates via wire or wireless, Bluetooth, for example, with a phone, or a factory installed or aftermarket feature built into the vehicle that often includes voice recognition. Many hands-free devices allow voice-activated dialing and operation. Okay, here's the rub. Hands-free devices are often seen as a solution to the risks of driver distraction because they help eliminate two obvious risks: visual, that is, looking away from the road, when messing around with the phone or device, and manual, removing your hands off of the steering wheel. However, a third type of distraction can occur when using cell phones while driving: cognitive distractions. That's taking your mind off of the road. That is a big deal, and I'm going to get into that here in this episode. The bottom line is, hands-free devices do not eliminate cognitive distraction. The amount of exposure to each type of risk is the key. Crashes are a function of the severity of each of the risks and how often those risks occur. Most people can recognize when they're visually or mechanically distracted and seek to disengage from these activities as quickly as possible. However, people typically do not realize when they are cognitively distracted, such as taking part in a phone conversation. Therefore, the risk lasts much longer. This likely explains why, researchers have not been able to find a safety benefit to the hands-free phone conversation. That's right, no real benefit, none discernible anyway, is had by hands-free conversations. Now, the National Safety Council has compiled more than 30 research studies and reports by scientists around the world that used a variety of research methods to compare driver performance with the handheld and the hands-free phones. All of these studies show hands-free phones offer no safety benefit while driving. Conversation occurs on both handheld and hands-free phones. The cognitive distraction from paying attention to the conversation, from listening and responding to a disembodied voice, contributes to numerous driving impairments. The key is the disembodied voice. I'm going to get into some myths about this one here. The key here is that you're talking to somebody who is not physically there. So your mind, cognitively, you have to infer sort of their body length. You're missing a lot of this stuff, right, that you normally would have in a physical conversation with somebody being there in the seat next to you. So that's key. The disembodied voice offers presents a level of cognitive distraction you wouldn't normally have. So let's look at why hands-free and handheld phones, why the conversations can impair your driving ability. First, multitasking is a myth. You need to get this one right. You need to communicate this one to your employees, whether behind the wheel or performing any other task at work. Multitasking is a myth. Human brains do not perform two tasks at the same time. They don't. Instead, the brain handles tasks sequentially, so switching between one task and another. Brains can juggle tasks very, very quickly, rapidly, which leads us to erroneously believe we are doing two tasks at the same time. And in reality, the brain is just switching attention between tasks, performing only one task at a time. So the brain not only juggles tasks, it also juggles focus and attention. When people attempt to perform two cognitively complex tasks, such as driving and talking on the phone, the brain shifts its focus. Right, people develop inattention blindness. This is what it's called. Now, important information falls out of view and is not processed by the brain. For example, drivers may not see a red light or a stop sign because this is a process people are not aware of. It's virtually impossible for people to realize they are mentally taking on too much. So there's also on the NSC website, I'll have links to this. They did research when a field of view out of the front of the windshield when somebody wasn't talking, and then they drew sort of a box. They were able to trace, where the eyes were looking. And then when they had a phone conversation, the field of view shrank. So they really didn't see in the periphery. Their focus narrowed because they were trying to do two things at once, switching back and forth. It was very unique. I found the study the NSC did, the white paper they published, pretty fascinating. I'll have a link to that one as well. But look, brain researchers, they have identified reaction time, switching costs, they call it, right? This is a measurable time when the brain is switching its attention and focus from one task to another. Research studying the impact of talking on cell phones while driving has identified slow reaction time to potential hazards, tangible time, right? Measurable and risky time lapses. Longer reaction time is an outcome of the brain switching focus, right? This impacts driving performance. The cost of switching could be a few tenths of a second per switch. When the brain switches repeatedly between tasks, that cost adds up. Even small amounts of time spent switching can lead to significant risks from delayed reaction and braking time. Here's an example. If a vehicle is traveling 40 miles per hour, it goes 120 feet before stopping. This equals 8 car lengths, an average car length of, 15 feet. A fraction of a second delay would make the car travel several additional car lengths. When a driver needs to react immediately, there is no margin for error here. Also, brains may face a bottleneck in which different regions of the brain must pull from a shared and limited resource for seemingly unrelated tasks, but constraining the mental resources available for those tasks. Research has identified that even when different cognitive tasks draw on two different regions of the brain, we can still have performance problems when trying to do dual tasks at the same time. Now, this may help explain why talking on cell phones could affect what a driver sees. Two visually unrelated activities become interrelated when a person is behind the wheel, and these tasks compete for our brain's information processing resources. And there are just flat-out limits to our mental workload. That's a fact. The workload of information processing can bring risks when unexpected driving hazards come up. Now, under most driving conditions, drivers are performing well-practiced automatic driving tasks. For example, without thinking about it much at all, drivers slow down when they see, yellow or red lights, and then activate turn signals when intending to make a turn or a lane change. These are automatic tasks for, experienced drivers. Staying within a lane, noting the speed limit and navigation signs, and even checking rear and side view mirrors are also automatic tasks for most experienced drivers. I mean, you can do these safely with an average cognitive workload. During the vast majority of road trips, nothing bad happens. I mean, that's the way it's supposed to go, right? But that can also lead people to feel a false sense of security or even competency when driving. It's complacency, right? We have that word. Complacency kills is the phrase. But drivers may believe that they can safely multitask. However, a driver always must be prepared to respond to the unexpected. And this is where those distractions that build up and mount up get a hold of us. Now, the industrial ergonomics field has been able to identify physical workload limits, and in the same way, the workload limits of our brains are now being identified in the same way, right? So mental ergonomics, if you will. But the challenge to the general public is the bottlenecks and the limits of the brain are more difficult to feel and literally see than the physical limitations. Another issue we have is multitasking impairs performance. I always joke, right? When somebody says, when I'll say, hey, how's it going? What are you working on? And it's like, well, I'm multitasking, and I'll chuckle and go, oh, so you're doing more than one thing inefficiently now. The joke, it's a joke for a reason. Multitasking impairs overall performance. We could safely, walk and chew gum, around the city that's got some, you're crossing some streets and has some other hazards, pedestrian type hazards. That's because one of those tasks, chewing gum, is not a cognitively demanding task. People are still able to visually scan the environment for potential hazards, light poles along the sidewalk, cracks in a sidewalk, obstructions, boxes, you know, being pushed out of a doorway on a dolly, somebody coming out of a doorway, a small dog on a leash, you know, stuff like that. People do not perform as well when trying to perform two attention-demanding tasks at the same time. And research shows even pedestrians don't effectively monitor their environment for safety while talking on their cell phones or texting. The challenge is managing two tasks demanding our cognitive attention. I don't know if it was like NBC, ABC, one of the major networks. They did a sort of a demonstration. They videotaped people crossing the street and they said, here, I want you to text a message while you're crossing the street. People could even stay in the crosswalk. They ended up, you know, this one guy even just had to stop right in the middle of the road and send the text. Half of them missed, you know, hit the curb and not the little ramp by the crosswalk. It was amazing because they weren't able to actually do the two things at the same time. So certainly most would agree that driving a vehicle involves a more complex set of tasks than just walking. So it's compounded. So before I get into sort of primary and secondary tasks and what happens when people switch attention between them, I want to stop and talk a little bit about our partners in safety. Do you have a regulatory obligation to account for contractors and suppliers when they are on site? Do you spend too much time managing contractor and supplier information, insurances, access rights, safety, security, all that stuff? Who's on location makes it easy for your organization to manage these requirements, including attendance tracking, hazard notice compliance, and orientation management across one or even multiple sites. Whether you are looking to simply recognize your visitors from your contractors or are seeking a full solution to manage regulatory and other compliance obligations around contractors or service providers, whosonlocation.com makes it easy. Manage contractor presence in and out of all of your sites, including remote locations and construction sites. Load their contracts, ensure correct qualifications are met, and gain important insights into your contractor's presence while on site. You can set up and manage contract and supplier profiles in minutes, record key contracts, and when the contracts expire and which location within your organization of the contract that it applies to, you can all manage that virtually. Ensure records are accurate and up to date by providing your contractors with access to your service provider portal to manage their information. You can manage primary and subcontractor profiles, manage their insurances, validate that they meet your minimum requirements. You can set up unique notification rules. Whosonlocation.com takes the hassle out of your contractor management. Get a 30-day free trial, no credit card required, and not just contractor management. You'll get access to all of the features, visitor management, contractor management, employee attendance, and evacuation management. All no hassle, no credit card required. Free 30-day trial right now. All you have to do is go to whosonlocation.com and sign up. Next, I want to talk about the official floor marking, floor sign company of the Safety Pro podcast, none other than Mighty Line Floor Tape. Look, we're talking about driver safety, right? Inside your facilities, we have forklifts, scissor lifts, and you know, carts, things like that. So driver safety inside your facility is just as important. You can help increase the safety of forklifts and other types of vehicles in your plant through the use of Mighty Line floor tape and floor signs. Mighty Line floor tape, 7 times thicker than the average floor tape, and the beveled edge makes it more durable for forklift traffic. It applies easily. It's very easy to remove as well if you need to, with very little residue. Best of all, it's all made right here in the USA. You can even use your own custom high-res logos on the floor signs. All you have to do is get a free sample sent directly to you. Go to mightylinetape.com/podcast, fill out the information, get a free sample. While you're there, check out past episodes of the Safety Pro podcast. Again, mightylinetape.com/podcast. Okay, so what are primary and secondary tasks and what happens when people switch attention between them? When people perform two tasks at the same time, you know, one is a primary task and the other one's a secondary task. So one task gets full focus, the primary task. The other moves to, you know, a mental back burner, right? That's the secondary task. People can move back and forth between primary and second tasks rather quickly, as we've established. Now, Secondary or back burner status doesn't mean people are ignoring the task. When a person stands, you know, in front of a stove full of pots, and all the pots and burners can be monitored at the same time, but one pot is getting primary attention. Maybe it's the front pot that you're stirring. While stirring the front pot, you can see the covered left back burner pot begin to boil and bubble. Quickly, the person must remove the hot lid, remembering to grab the pot holder. You have to keep your hand away from the steam as you lift the lid. So you're switching. That now is your primary task. Okay, so it can be difficult to continue even stirring the right front pot while switching attention to the back pot, right? So a person may or may not be aware that the stirring pattern has changed in the front pot, which was supposed to be the primary task, getting the full attention. Or you may have even put the spoon down, knowing that, you know, you can't do two potentially harmful tasks at the same time and stay safe. So you can switch rapidly between two tasks, but only one can be a primary task at a time. Now, certainly driving is more cognitively complex than, you know, cooking over the stove, right? But the human brain does the same switching between primary and secondary tasks when you're driving a vehicle. So talking on a handheld phone would be like the secondary task. Hopefully is a secondary task. Driving the vehicle is a primary task. I mean, right? Should driving a vehicle ever be a back burner task? No, it shouldn't. But, you know, this is what we're getting at, is that switch between the two, especially if you have a heated conversation or something that requires a lot of focus. If you're talking about a contract or you're talking about deadlines or some lot of technical data somebody's asking you to recall, think about the cognitive workload or bottleneck you create while you're driving, coming up to a four-way stop or a complicated intersection, and somebody's asking you about measurements on, you know, the layout of a building plan or a job site or something like that. Now, we have some tools that we can use to sort of manage and get our arms around all of this, right? You know, ANSI has a publication, Z15.1. It's called Safe Practices for Motor Vehicle Operations, and it offers guidelines and best practices for motor vehicle safety programs that companies can adopt and implement, right? I'll have a link to this, but basically it's a 10-step program to minimize risks of crashes, right, of vehicle accidents. So again, it provides guidelines for what an employer can do to improve traffic safety performance and minimize the risk of motor vehicle accidents. Now, you can follow these steps to help ensure that you hire capable drivers, only allow eligible drivers to drive company vehicles, and maintain company vehicles properly. Adherence to these 10 steps can also help keep your motor vehicle insurance costs as low as possible. And there's a guidebook. I'll have a link to it. But here are the 10 steps. I'm going to break them down for you, right? Step 1, senior management commitment and employee involvement. Now, senior management can provide leadership, set policies, allocate resources like, you know, staff and budget to create a safety culture, actively encouraging employee participation and involvement at all levels of the organization is a good practice and will help the effort to succeed. Workers and their representatives must be involved in the initial planning phase of any workplace safety program, not just this one. Step 2, written policies and procedures. A written statement emphasizing the commitment to reducing traffic-related deaths and injuries is essential to a successful program. It sets the tone. It defines our goal. So create a clear, comprehensive, and enforceable set of traffic safety policies. Communicate them to all employees. Post them throughout the workplace. Distribute copies periodically. Discuss the policies at company meetings. You know, the whole nine yards, just like any other effort you have in workplace safety. Offer incentives for sticking to the rules and point out the consequences for disregarding them. Step 3, driver agreements. Establish an agreement or even a contract with employees who drive for work purposes, whether they drive assigned company vehicles or their personal vehicles. By signing an agreement, the driver will acknowledge awareness and understanding of the company's traffic safety policies, procedures, and expectations regarding the performance, driving performance, if you will, vehicle maintenance, and reporting of moving violations. Step 4, speaking of moving violations, motor vehicle records checks. Check the driving records of all employees who drive for work purposes. Screen out drivers who have poor driving records, since they are most likely to cause problems in the future. Not always, but there's a reason why we do this. Periodically review the motor vehicle records, or MVRs, to ensure that drivers maintain a good driving record. Clearly define the number of violations an employee or driver can have before losing the privilege of driving for work, and provide training where needed. Step 5, crash reporting and investigation. You need to establish and enforce a crash reporting and investigation process. All crashes, regardless of severity, should be reported to the employee's supervisor as soon as feasible after the incident. Company policies and procedures should clearly guide drivers through their responsibilities in a crash situation. Review all crashes to determine their cause and whether or not the incidents were preventable. Understanding root causes of crashes and why they are happening, regardless of fault, forms the basis for eliminating them in the future. Step 6. Vehicle selection, maintenance, and inspection. Properly maintaining and routinely inspecting company vehicles is an important part of preventing crashes and related losses. Review the safety features of all vehicles that are considered for use. Choose vehicles that demonstrate best-in-class status for crashworthiness and overall safety. Regular maintenance, preventative maintenance, should be done at specific mileage intervals consistent with the manufacturer's recommendation. Just like anything else in the workplace, any kind of motor vehicle or heavy equipment or machinery, you're going to have to follow the manufacturer's recommended PM schedules. A mechanic should do a thorough inspection of each vehicle at least annually, with documented results placed in the vehicle's file. Personal vehicles that are used for company business are not necessarily subject to the same criteria and are generally the responsibility of the owner of the vehicle. However, personal vehicles used on company business should be maintained in a manner that provides the employee with the maximum safety and reflects positively on the company. Step 7, disciplinary action system. Develop a strategy to determine the course of action after a moving violation and or other, preventable crashes. The system should provide for progressive discipline if a driver begins to develop a pattern of repeated traffic violations or preventable crashes or incidents. The system should describe what specific actions will be taken if a driver accumulates a certain number of violations or preventable crashes in a predefined period. So keep all that in mind. Step 8, reward and incentive program. Develop and implement a driver reward and incentive program to make safe driving an integral part of your business culture. Safe driving behaviors contribute directly to the bottom line and should be recognized as such. Incorporate driving performance into the overall evaluation of job performance. Reward and incentive programs typically involve recognition, maybe monetary rewards. I'm not a big fan of the money. I mean, I'm a big fan of money. Who isn't? But in the workplace, it takes, 7 actual dollars to get the same psychological motivational effect as $1 in a non-cash type of reward. Rewards recognition is probably a topic I'm going to cover separately. But, look, special, privileges, within the company, parking spots, other incentives, to anything you can do to motivate positive behavior. Just be careful with some of the reward and recognition that you don't make them too valuable, that it promotes underreporting. Step 9, driver training and communication. Provide continuous driver safety training and communication. Even experienced drivers benefit from periodic training and reminders of safe driving practices and skills, right? So don't let people cop out because they're like, I'm an experienced driver. It's easy to become complacent, as I said before, and to not think about the consequences of poor driving habits. And step 10, regulatory compliance. Ensure adherence to highway safety regulations. It is important to clearly establish which, if any, local, state, and/or federal regulations govern your vehicles and/or drivers. These regulations may involve, but aren't necessarily limited to, the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, U.S. Department of Transportation, National Highway Transportation Safety Administration, Federal Highway Administration, and any Employment Standards Administration rules. So keep that in mind. Always do a thorough review of, you know, what are we asking our people to do on the clock in their personal vehicle or company vehicle? And, you know, what type of work are they doing? What type of materials and goods are they transporting on our behalf? And how does that, you know, what kind of regulatory compliance may apply to us? So you may have some additional rules, right? You know, look, in general, you want to promote safe driving practices. The safety issues that we've been talking about have to be addressed in some way, shape, or form in an employee awareness and training program, or your company safety policy should address driver safety if you have drivers. You're going to want to cover basic safety policies like, you know, securing materials during transport. If you're in construction or sales or service work, where you have field service techs, you know, tools, equipment, you know, have to be secured while being transported to prevent unsafe movement, right? During a crash or when making sudden maneuvers, loose objects can slide around or become airborne and cause injury for the driver or passengers. Not to mention the fact that you've got objects flying around in the cab of a vehicle. That's just a hazard in and of itself. Seatbelt use, right? You're going to have some policy or statement about seatbelt use. The single most effective means of reducing deaths and serious injuries in traffic crashes, right? So what causes most of the injuries and fatalities? Contact with the interior of the vehicle. So, you know, physical restraints, seatbelts, everything, preventing contact with the interior of the vehicle or being ejected. That's going to be your, you know, first line of defense right there. And then now you have airbags and everything else. So, you know, make sure you have a policy regarding seatbelt use, alcohol and drug, impaired driving type of policy or statement. I mean, what, it's estimated that 3 in every 10 Americans will be involved in an impaired driving-related crash at some time in their life. Alcohol and certain prescription drugs, over-the-counter medications, illegal drugs, they all affect a person's ability to drive safely due to decreased alertness, concentration, coordination, and reaction time. So you got to have a policy covering this as well. Fatigue. Driver fatigue is huge. It's a big one. I think, you know, estimates say that fatigue is even more impairing than being drunk behind the wheel. Fatigued or drowsy driving may be involved in more than 100,000 crashes each year, resulting in 40,000 injuries and 1,500 deaths. Just related to fatigue or drowsy driving, employees should be well-rested, alert, and sober on the road, so they're in a position to defend themselves from drivers who do not make the same choices. So train employees to make smart choices when they're behind the wheel on and off the job. Here's an example. An employer who says if you're going to travel on business, it has to be during working hours. I'm familiar with several companies that have this policy. You know, other companies are like, yeah, we're going to save time and money and say, you know, we want you to, you know, you work in Ohio and we want you to travel to, you know, New Mexico for on business to that off-field office. You're going to travel over the weekend so you can get there on Monday. You know, there are, you know, companies that have a policy that say, no, you travel on Monday during working hours. We don't want you driving or traveling and getting somewhere late and getting behind the wheel of the rental car and trying to find a hotel out of your normal, you know, sleep pattern or your normal working hours. So that's a good policy to have. Aggressive driving. You need to address this as well in your safety program. And these are things you can also provide some training around. You know, employees commuting to and from work or traveling for work can get caught up in bottlenecks, traffic delays, you know, wasting your time, reducing productivity. These situations all create frustration and can spark aggressive driving behavior. You know, rapid lane changes, jerking the car out from behind somebody to make a pass you normally wouldn't make. So aggressive driving acts like excessive speed, tailgating, failing to signal a lane change, you know, turning, you know, running a red light or blowing through a light just to be in a hurry. You know, it's best to avoid engaging in conflict with other drivers or, these aggressive techniques. They can lead to accidents and incidents. And you know what? I've seen this on the road, company vehicles where drivers are doing this and it has the company name right on the vehicle. That is just poor image, right? This is a bad image of the company. You don't want it. Also, if you have younger drivers, Under federal law, 16-year-old workers are prohibited from driving as a part of their job, and 17-year-olds may drive for work only under strictly limited circumstances. There are some state laws that might be more restrictive than federal laws, so make sure you read up on child labor laws in your state, but be familiar with the regulations that govern your employees and their driving. Bottom line, every 7 seconds, someone is injured in a car crash, and every 15 minutes, someone is killed in a car crash. Employers absorb costs associated with these crashes, whether they occur on or off the job. Workplace policies and employee education can help protect your employees and your organization as well, and also help protect the community. Learn the facts about this number one cause of workplace deaths and how to mitigate the risks. And you can do this by downloading a free online safe driving kit from the National Safety Council. It contains resources for safety and HR professionals, tips, resources to help build senior management support for policies, educate and influence safer driving behaviors, and reduce crash risks. The kit contains materials designed to share with employees year-round and reinforce company policies. It contains videos, fact sheets, FAQs, even MythBusters, which is good. A lot of people have these myths about being able to multitask and things like that. You need to talk about this stuff. It contains infographics, posters, survivor advocate stories, activities to engage employees, links to safe driving resources, ready-made communications to educate employees. Look, you can join the thousands of employers that have used the National Safety Council kit for their safe driving education. I'll have a link for you to download this kit. Again, provided by the National Safety Council and their sponsors. I have no, just full disclosure, I have no affiliate relationship with the National Safety Council. I am not being paid to mention the National Safety Council. I'm mentioning this because, you know, that's what I do. It's a podcast, you know. It's helping you manage safety one episode at a time. And in this episode, I've got some tools that I've used in the past that I've relied on that you can get started with using in your company right now. And that's all I'm doing. I'm sharing this with you, and the National Safety Council has a ton of research that they've curated and they've even done and sponsored on distracted driving, the distracted brain, a white paper on that one, but also this kit you can download. So get started today, hit the link in the show notes or go to thesafetypropodcast.com, go to this episode page and you will find all the links there as well. Share your stories. Let me know, you know, what best practices you've implemented for driver safety. I'd love to read about those, get some good ideas from you. So hopefully this episode provided you with some good information that you can use. That's my goal. If not, let me know. If it did help you, you know, share that as well. You can always drop me a note, info@thesafetypropodcast.com. Hit the link in the show notes or go to thesafetypropodcast.com. You can get a hold of me there via email. As well, you can find me on LinkedIn, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. We have a Facebook page. So just go ahead and look for me anywhere you are online and you'll find me somewhere out there. So, hey, I'm looking forward to hearing your feedback. Don't forget, go ahead and take a look at our partners in safety, whosonlocation.com and mightylinetape.com/podcast. Two great partners in safety helping making this happen for you. So share some love with them as well. And until the next Safety Pro podcast episode, please, as always, be safe.